Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you are Tisha.
Okay, I guess I'm officially moderator, but we all can, of course, do our share on that. Let's maybe just set a quick agenda. That is, what do we want to try to accomplish today? I see that we do have several sets of questions now. We could spend some time going through those. Does that sound like the main focus of what we're doing today?
I think so.
I do, too.
So, again, if we work backwards, when do we have to have some semblance of something done in order for Tisha, for example, to get this out to her class this semester? Because that was one of our goals, is to actually pilot it this semester.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen for my class, but I have a colleague teaching a May term course.
Okay.
And I have two classes now, although they're second semester stats, but I have a colleague who just started introductory stats this week as well. We just actually started last week, and we're through July. So I can pilot it with some students.
Okay. Well, the goal,
so,
I suppose. Yeah.
I was just going to say, to answer your question, I would say by if we can get something by mid-May, then that would be great to distribute it to some students. Sorry, go ahead, Gail.
No, that's good. I was kind of say about the same thing. Essentially, the sooner the better. The sooner we have it, we can get more people involved. What will be our bottleneck on this, if anything? I suppose when we go through the questions, we'll see if we have some gaps that we need to work on. Should we just turn to the questions and see how far we are, and then come back to Michael's question issue about what we need to do to make sure we get things together in time to be useful?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, does everyone have a copy of the questions that Tisha sent?
Yes.
Sample questions on distributional thinking?
Yes.
Yep.
I do.
Okay. Yeah. So why don't we start there? So the first question, we have this, we see the two distributions. This is the pink. Here are the results from two different classes on their math quiz. Which class did better, the pink class or the black class, and why? So this is a short answer, open-ended question. How would you plan to score this?
Mm-hmm.
I guess
that was what my question was going to be.
Yeah.
Oh. I don't know. We'll have to come up with some sort of a rubric. And Redding and Reed's paper, they were looking at both variability and distributional thinking, and they have some sort of a framework. And if a student got to this step, or they were thinking about this, you know, they received a certain score. And I suppose in the back of my mind, I have something like that. I'm
mm-hmm.
starting to formulate that there are different levels of thinking, and it would take
mm-hmm.
some sitting down and writing out a rubric and agreeing on all of that.
Right.
This reminded me a bit of some of the articles that I was reading on the variability, where they were trying to do exactly this, compare two distributions, and they were, again, looking at levels of thinking. Are they just picking the most extreme values? Are they reasoning on just certain classes, or are they actually looking at the whole thing as a distribution? So I guess whatever the rubric is would have to have some kind of levels like that.
Yeah, I was in looking at this and thinking about the same thing that Michelle just said, I wonder whether we shouldn't tweak the problem a bit so that, I don't want to say that there's a trick in it, but so that we, for example, you know, the answer should be black because the mean is higher, but maybe we take out the point at 9 so that there's one student in the pink group who did better. So
yep.
that if they do look at the range, it's more clear that they got it wrong. Although I guess if they explain it well, which is a big assumption, then that would come through in the why part, in the answer to why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could think about the sub pieces of this that we expect people to be dealing with. When you talk about distribution, to describe a distribution, there are the three concepts: the concepts of sort of central tendency, what's the typical score, something about how variable are the data, and then most important one, the shape. What's the shape of it? And we want people to be able to think about all three of those things when they think about a distribution. This one gets at, I suppose, some of that. If you think about the distractors here, how could people go wrong? They could be looking at the bigger class and say, well, you have more people who have scores like the sixes and sevens. Or Michael's little distractor might be a good one if you had a bigger range on it or bigger maximum score. What I'm thinking of is just ways to, how would one separate the different subcomponents of distributional thinking that we're after?
Right. I mean, the idea of a histogram itself kind of is subsumed within that. So, for example, if people don't even read the histogram right and say the heights of the bars for 5 and 6 in the pink group are the highest, they might think that that class therefore did the best because they hit the top of the histogram, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that we've talked about before.
Right.
I know it's hard to do this because before you administer the question, you want to know how you're going to evaluate it. But I still think that if you get the questions out there, some pilot data, and we start to see some of the responses, I think creating a rubric might be a little bit easier after you start to see some of the extremes and how they're thinking. I don't know if you have any advice about that or not.
Yeah, I think we should just be clear that we're going to do some pilot work on this. In any case, pilot thing, you don't necessarily expect that you're going to have the final rubric.
I do like, Michael, your suggestion with tweaking the problem.
Mm-hmm. I do, too, because I'm looking at it, and I'm seeing the 7, 8, and 9 is the exact same number of people in both groups in those three, which was probably done intentionally, but I do think it would be good to get rid of the 9.
Yeah.
In one of them, just to see whether they're just looking at, well, who did that, which group had somebody do the absolute best.
Yeah, that's right. I think having some more things that could be distractors will make it easier to find how people go wrong.
And in a sense, doesn't this question also gets a bit at proportional reasoning a little bit, too, because if they look at the counts in the 7, 8, 9, they're the same. So they have to kind of decide that the black group did better. They have to consider that the proportion that did well was higher there than it is in the other group. We've read a lot and talked a lot about how it's the transition between counts and proportional reasoning isn't so trivial for everybody.
There's quite a lot
in this question.
I think if this is supposed to be about distributional thinking in general, I think Dale's point that there's really three primary things that people look at in distributions, and I often add a fourth and a fifth of being, the fourth being, are there outliers, and the fifth is freedom for the student to say, is there anything else striking about this distribution that isn't described in any of the four characteristics above? But if we focus on those first three, I wonder if we shouldn't ask all of those three questions for the students. Which class did better? Which class, showed more varied results? Which class showed a symmetric distribution?
Mm-hmm.
And for each one, ask why. I mean, unless we say that distributional thinking is primarily about the mean or the median or whatever central tendency measure you're using, because that's really all this question is assessing.
I like that idea. Why don't you ask them, those three things specifically, and then ask them to make a global judgment?
Right. Based on that, which one did better? Could do that. So, which class? So, just thinking how you'd phrase that. Which class? The variability is a little tricky here too, because if we take out the 9 from the pink class, the range would be smaller, but the variability is still probably larger in the black class. Oh, no, I'm going the wrong way here. I'm thinking of taking out the 9 from the black class, right? So that you might give the wrong answer.
So that you might end up thinking it's the pink class that did better because they had one person who got a 9.
Right, yeah, yeah. But if you ask now about variability, that's going to be a little tricky, but it's still, you think it's clear enough that the variability is still greater in the black class, even if you take out the 9?
Well, so maybe, I don't want to make this too complicated, but maybe we think about a 3-part question where we ask them, you know, which one has more variability? What statistic are you using to measure that?
Mm-hmm.
And then ask kind of the open-ended question as well. Because if they say, you know, the pink group has a higher range, then we'll say, okay, they're correct.
Yeah.
I mean, because the reality is we find distributions that aren't, compare distributions that aren't, you know, always consistent in terms of which measure, consistent in terms of which one has more variability based on which measure you're looking at.
Right.
I agree with that even if, you know, they would give the other group, if you're looking at standard deviation, they give the wrong one. If they explain that they're looking the max to the min, then they're thinking correctly.
Hmm. Is this the format you're going to give it in, as a dot plot like this?
Don't know. Don't have to, I suppose.
I'm just curious.
You mean as opposed to maybe a histogram or something?
Either a histogram or, how do we compare groups? I think with box plots more often than not.
The thing that I like about the dot plot or X plot or whatever it is here is that you actually see each observation.
Yeah, if we are going to, I think, especially remove that one extreme, the 9, that getting at something like that is going to be easier. If a student does tend to focus on one point, then
right. This
representation would pull that out.
I mean, I actually like dot plots when you have discrete points like we have here. If there's a small number of them.
Yeah, I do too. And this one, as opposed to the box plot, you do get the shape here.
Right.
And I think getting at the variation, a lot of times students kind of get this idea, well, if it looks normal, then it must, you know, it's got this nice property, and the standard deviation must be kind of smaller, because we know if it's skewed and there's outliers, it makes the standard deviation bigger. So it kind of sees whether they're reasoning on this rule method or, you know, general idea or whether they're getting a more global idea of the variability. I kind of like this representation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have in some of the other questions, Andy, we've got some other questions in another section that have some box plots.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to give them access to a computer when they do this?
No, I don't think so. I wouldn't assume. You probably don't want to ask them a statistic off that, and why? So if you ask which class has greater variability, and why, or how, you know,
or explain or something,
yeah, something like that. Now, if we think about these three characteristics, so the question is which class has greater variability, that would be fairly easy to ask. What about shape? Do we say, we could just say, how do the classes differ in shape? Or how would you word that?
I mean, I don't have a problem. When I ask about shape, I often say, you know, is the distribution symmetric, right skewed, positively skewed, or negatively skewed? I wouldn't have a problem asking that, you know. Is the pink distribution symmetric, positively skewed, or negatively skewed? Is the black distribution symmetric, positively skewed, or negatively skewed?
If you ask the more open-ended question about how would you describe these distributions, or how do the shape, or ask just how do these classes differ in their shape, and you might be looking for people to talk about symmetry versus skew. Well, the question is, do you want to ask people specifically, do you want to cue them on skew and symmetry or not?
I mean, it's a little hard, I think, given that we have more observations in the pink data set than the black one. Because if you said describe the shape, somebody might say the pink one's higher. And that's not at all of what we're looking for. Now, maybe that shows a misconception. But shape is a little bit of a general term for me.
Yeah.
At least maybe shape of the distribution. I don't know.
What is the shape? It's taking it a little bit further, but what does the shape of each distribution tell you about the class or something like that? So they have to think, you know, when you see the black one, that maybe it'll come out with, okay, it's less skewed, and it's, you know, they have kind of a bulk that did okay, and then you've got a few people who did really badly, whereas the other one, you've got a lot of people who did fair and a few who did well and poorly. So kind of taking it one step further into shape as giving you information about how the class did. Is that too much?
That's a good overall comprehensive question that maybe gets at this distributional thinking. You look at these distributions and say, now what does that tell you about how the classes did? And you could pull out of that average as well as variability as well as shape. But would people do that without some prompting?
Right.
What do these distributions tell you about how classes did on average, A, how they did on average, B, the variability in the classes, and C, the shapes of the distribution. Versus saying, how do these classes differ in shape?
Right.
But getting to, so what? I kind of like that idea. I don't know if that's getting beyond what we need to do here, but that's certainly where we'd want to go.
In any case, I think we all agree that it's a rich question, and that the question which class did better is not enough. That we want more information than that. Did we all agree on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, there's more there. We can pull more out of it for sure than that. And in fact, in practice, if you looked at that, you would want to consider the shape of the distribution. The fact that you only have a few people not doing well in the black class. So where are we with that?
Yeah, so what's the plan from here with this?
No, Tisha, did we beat up enough on this one?
Yeah. Is your question, Michael, where are we on this question, or more general, are we going to rewrite them and send them to each other again?
Yeah, I guess that's... Okay. That's kind of the latter is more of where I was going.
I would be willing to take all of these suggestions right now and throw together a draft in the next couple of days and get them out to everybody again.
Okay.
That sounds good.
Yeah, that would be efficient use of our time here, yeah.
So do you want to move on to the next question?
Can I make one last suggestion?
Please.
Instead of saying which one has more variability, just to ask them compare the variability of the two classes, and then you see whether they're using the range or spread from the center, something like that?
Sure.
Forcing them to make a choice.
You could compare variability, compare average performance, you could compare shape.
Mm-hmm. And then like Andy's suggestion with one last question, asking them to make a global judgment, then ask something like, which do you think did better, after asking to compare based on the other criteria, is that what we were discussing?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. See if they can pull it all together to make some kind of judgment.
I will take a stab at that, and it'll probably happen early next week. I'll get it out to you. Because I've got to write finals first.
Okay, question D2. D2, where we have the plots of a few scores. Three distinct scenarios. For which of the following scenarios might you conclude that there is a real difference in the class mean?
I think I would have two comments on this. I wonder if for the second scenario we want to make the means a little further apart from each other, but also make the variability a lot higher.
Okay.
So that we really show that the means are different. Because if you just look at the three means, I think it's pretty clear to say that the third graph has means that are farthest apart.
Yep.
And I don't think they're getting the distributional thinking. So maybe even design it so that the means in the third scenario are closer together than the second scenario,
gotcha.
But just with smaller variations.
So with less variability. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep, good idea. So that's one comment. My second comment is this feels a little bit like naked data to me, and I'm wondering if we can do anything to avoid that. So scenario one, scenario two, scenario three feels a little cryptic, if you will. And so I wonder if we can call it, you know, like statistics one class, statistics two class, and statistics three class or something.
But then within those...
And then you have
three
class
classes.
A, class B, class C
okay.
within that.
Okay.
You know, or if the goal is to give this to college students,
right.
call it, you know, fall semester, and spring semester or something.
Could you even do, that like, one biology class and one math class and one...
Great. All right. Great.
I was thinking biology. That's really
yeah.
funny.
But I think just to give it a context might be yep. nice.
I agree. I had a hard time with what to call those.
Yeah, and I like the idea of just fall, spring, and summer. That's very natural. And then having three disciplines. So you've got psychology and biology and whatever,
okay.
sociology.
So can someone enlighten me on this? Are there just like five students per class?
Yeah,
I can make that different too.
Looks like
I've never seen.
Class.
I mean, I know what this is supposed to represent, but I've never seen a plot like this. I don't think.
Yeah, I think that each dot represented an observation.
Huh.
So I will.
It's a very small private university.
Yeah. What do you think? Like 10?
We randomly sampled four people from each class.
Well, and only three from the last one, but.
That's right. So they're all falling on top of each other. Yeah, I can add more students too.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I think the idea sounds good. Now, just to think through, what are we pulling apart in this? I mean, the notion of how variable the scores are within a group being the critical feature.
Mm-hmm. This is one that's very, very similar to, it says it at the top, writing and reads. And they actually have a hierarchy, I guess, of thinking. And they have
mm-hmm.
what they used when they were measuring understanding of both variability and distributional thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe I should have put that together and sent it out too. But, you know, they looked at whether students focus on just the mean or if they start to consider variation as well, and then how well they can articulate their thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I have an idea that would make it, I don't know if this could work, but that would make it so that you don't have to redo, add a lot more students, is could you make it each scenario is a class and that you gave three different versions of an exam to the same class? You gave the four students had one version, four students had another, and four students had another, and you're trying to figure out whether it was fair, were the four exams comparable, is there one easier than another, something like that. Then you wouldn't have to change your whole graphic here. I was just thinking of those terms.
Yeah, and once again, maybe we can even name them. You know, maybe you can say, you know, in each of three classes, the professors tried three different exams, one with only multiple choice questions, one with only true-false questions, and one with open-ended questions, or something like that.
Okay.
Is that too much context, or?
It's good. You know, students get messed up on context, and sometimes that overrides their statistical thinking.
Right.
Just be aware of that, you know. So if someone, like, might say to that, well, open-ended questions are harder, so obviously those students did worse. We ran into that this last summer.
I mean, so maybe we just say three different sections of the class.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, okay,
yeah,
I sort of interrupted. I was thinking of this question as you were discussing what's the thinking that we're picking apart here, and I kind of interrupted while you were thinking about what are we picking apart here. So we're getting into the variability, comparing variability across the different groups. comparing the mean relative to the variability, differences in means relative to differences in variability. However, this one doesn't have any sort of shape thinking, but I think that's okay. They don't all have to have shape thinking.
Right.
Distributional thinking. What's your feeling on that?
I would agree.
Yeah, I agree. Okay.
Would it be easier just to add more students to this than it would be to add a whole lot of context, do you think? Should I just shoot for three different disciplines, three different semesters?
Yeah, that does make the context easier.
You know, the other thing you could possibly do, I don't know, I might make it more too complex, but is just to get rid of the three different scenarios and put like five groups in there in one scenario and then ask them about specific groups. You know.
Can you say that again?
You'd have basically one scenario with like, you know, on the picture here it would be like class A, B, C, D, E or something like that. And then you could ask them about differences between specific groups, so like class A and class C.
Do class A and class B differ?
Yes.
Do class C differ? Hmm.
You know, something like I was just kind of glancing at your variability questions, like the one where you've got like there's like four box plots. And then you could ask about, you know, I don't know, that might be one option too.
Well, I don't know. I kind of like this, I think, in general. We still have the issue with where we put the means to pull apart that. I was just going to say have the same number of cases in each group, so scenario three ought to have the same number.
Add more to all of them.
I don't know if you have to add a whole lot more data, but
I would say to Andy's suggestion, I think it's a nice framework because it only presents one idea to the students, but what I like about the way it's presented here is that it immediately makes me think ANOVA. And so I think of, is the ANOVA significant? And maybe that's just my thinking as a statistician and not where the students would go with it. But my hope is that they'd be able to look at the first two and say ANOVA would say not significant, and the third one, the ANOVA, is significant.
Is that any?
Did anyone else think that way, or is that just me?
Could you do it with just two groups in each one instead of three? Is it the same thing?
That might work. You see, the problem with having just one scenario is then we'd be comparing two groups that differ in variability, too. And we could do that, but that introduces another idea.
That's true.
But we could probably just do, like, class A, class B, or fall, spring, too, right? I mean, you could get the same thing, simplify it a little bit. You could
so we could do three scenarios, but with only two classes per scenario.
Yes, because I think that would still get at the same ideas, but it would simplify it a little bit.
Yeah, t-tests instead of ANOVA.
Right.
Right, exactly.
Does that sound reasonable?
Sure, and then you can set it up. Two instructors want to compare their results across, you know, three different semesters, something like that.
All right. I will do the same thing. I'll take a stab at this and rework it.
Sounds perfect. Let's then turn to the next one. What did I do with it here? Michael? Would it be okay to go to the questions on the sampling distribution?
Yep.
Okay. So we have from Michael. You had the... a comment there, what is the sampling distribution, and so forth. Are these questions that you're thinking of including in there? Or is that just...
That was actually just kind of... So I based it a little bit on what Dale had sent out, where he kind of defined what the points were. But then I started... This was more for myself, you know, to really think through it. So what is a sampling distribution? So I said for each sample, we calculate a summary statistic, and it's the distribution of these summary statistics is the sampling distribution.
Okay, gotcha. And so
kind of my thinking of what it entailed in hopes to really figure out what each of these questions is capturing.
Okay, so then the first question, we have Shelley flipping a coin 50 times, recording the percentage of heads. Diane flips it 10 times, records the percentage of heads. Which person is more likely to get 20% or fewer heads? And then we have, I guess, the A, Diane, because you flip, the more you flip, the closer you get to 50%. Shelley, because the greater the sample size, the greater the variability in results. And then
that's part C.
Part C, yeah. Okay, neither, because each coin flip is a separate event. Okay. When I saw this, one thought would be that we may be combining two things, making double-headed answers, that you might believe it's Diane, but not for that reason. Maybe just having a short answer, open-ended, would get at what we want. We'd have to come up with a rubric then for scoring it, but we wouldn't presume their reasoning.
I was looking at this one the other day as well. This is on one of the original lists that you had put up, I think.
Correct.
And I was thinking A is slightly misleading because when you say Diane, because the more you flip, the closer you get to 50%. Whereas for me, it's Shelley is the one who's flipping more. So I see why it should be Diane because Shelley's flipping more, so Shelley should be closer to 50%, so Diane should be further away. But I think the wording is a bit odd because it almost sounds like Diane's the one who's flipping more. Do you see what I mean?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I think those comments are really good. Maybe one possibility is to say Diane, Shelley, or neither and ask them to explain why. And then maybe after we get the pilot study, we could actually develop maybe not three but six answers.
Right.
You know, Diane because A, Diane because B, Shelley because A, Shelley because B, and neither because A, neither because B. Although we might only get one for neither, but
that's how we've been doing a lot of multiple choice questions around here, is we just ask very open-ended ones and we kind of aggregate all of our students' responses and say, hey, look, there's a lot of them that think this way and it's not right. And you do start to get good multiple choice problems from asking open-ended ones first.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So we can do pretty quickly then on that. Okay. Well, let's go to number two then, SD2. The amount of time it takes to complete an exam has a left or negatively skewed distribution with a mean of 65, standard deviation of 8. Sample of 4 selected at random. Describe and draw a picture of the sampling distribution of the sample mean based on n equals 64. Okay. So this presumes they know then what is a negatively skewed or left skewed, which is maybe okay.
Which they should by the time they get to sampling distribution, we would hope.
But if they don't know, they might could draw the distribution in the class to remove. Because potentially there's ambiguity in that you could have a distribution where you have everybody is at 67 minutes except one person who turned it in after 1 minute, and you'd have maybe a mean and standard deviation that would match that. But then the n of 64 may not be enough to have a normal sampling distribution. But if we drew the distribution of the class saying, you know, here is a distribution of the time it took and give the mean and standard deviation and then ask them to draw the sampling distribution.
It becomes a little bit like the third question.
I was just going to ask, maybe we've already answered this and I missed it, but how many questions did we plan on asking for each topic, or did we not ever?
I don't think we settled it, but around 3 or 4, maybe 2, 3, 4.
Yeah,
is that right?
I think probably the more we get, the more reliable our result will be. But the more we have, the more time it'll take students, and that's a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to put together 4 for distribution, and I didn't because all the others I started looking at were basically asking the same things of the student anyway. Mm-hmm. And I liked the 2 that I sent forward the best.
Mm-hmm.
But
2 could be fine. Well, Michael, your point that question 3 gets at similar sort of thing. Maybe that I like question. Yeah. And maybe that does.
I'm sorry, you like? I didn't hear that question.
I do like question 3, the one where you show the graphs and you know the various graphs and say
right.
Now which of the represents a sampling distribution.
The other thing, I changed that third question. It used to say which graph represents a sampling distribution of sample means for sample size 1, and I added it to say A, B, C, D, or E, because technically a good answer might have been, well, the one in the upper left-hand corner, which was the original distribution.
Right.
So I tried to head that off.
That'd be the best choice. Justified choice. Okay, so that's focusing very much then on role of sample size.
When we talk about sampling distribution, to go back up to the very top with Michael saying this distribution is a sampling, the distribution of these summary statistics is a sampling distribution. And really we want to get at a little bit more at that, which is that the variation in this distribution depends on the sample size. Taken. So that's what we're looking at in question 3. We're kind of getting that, and even in question 2, we're getting at that a little bit, right?
Right. I guess to summarize, and this is where I think I had it written a little bit more on my framing at top and then erased it, but I guess the idea that we want them to take is the center of the sampling distribution is the same as the population, but the spread of the sampling distribution depends on sample size.
Right.
And I guess we want to say that if the sample size is large enough, we should see a normal distribution, so in terms of the shape.
Yeah.
Assuming I think we said we're always talking about the mean as the summary statistic, right? We don't want to think about, you know,
right,
taking the median and the sampling distributions of the median, right? I think we had that discussion once.
Yeah, I agree. I want, you know, we could have a distractor here. For a sample of size 1, that would have exactly the same mean and standard deviation as the population, but would be a nice normal distribution. You know, that would separate the notion of, do you think that it becomes normal even with a very small sample?
Uh-huh.
For sample size 1, you can't get much smaller than that.
0? I don't know. Right. Doesn't make sense.
Do you think that would add any value so that for question A, which represents a sampling distribution of sample means for sample size 1, where one of the choices would be a beautiful normal distribution that would have the same mean and standard deviation as the population?
I like it.
And then they'd have to justify, well, why isn't it that relative to B?
Yeah, I wonder if that's a good extra option to put in.
Can we expand the justifier choice to actually talk about the three aspects that we're interested in? So can we say justify your choice by, you know, explaining why the mean is, why the mean, the spread, and the shape is what it is, or something like that. That's not well worded, but, you know, just
well,
by choice by explaining the mean, the variance, and the shape.
Right, or the alternative idea is that they should be using some of those ideas to justify it, and we maybe see whether they in fact do that. Right. I mean, if we prompt them to look at the mean and look at the standard deviation, they might, okay, got it. But if we don't prompt them, well, the question is, what do we want to be testing here? Their ability to do that without prompting, or their ability to explain what the mean would be in standard deviation?
You know, I wonder if it's worthwhile to say, I mean, this might be too much work for the students, but to say, for each graph, explain why it is or is not a sampling distribution of size 1 and a sampling distribution of size 9. Because it actually might be nice to see basically what's their logic reading through this problem. Because if I were to read through this problem, I would look at A, B, C, D, and E, and I would think about ruling some of them out for certain reasons.
Mm-hmm. That could do it. And then we can set up the distractors that get at each of the separate little pieces that we want to get at.
Right.
Now, I think that's a good idea, but I'm starting to think in terms of potentially being the one to administer these pilot tests for the first time. And we've got a lot of very rich single questions, but all of them are going to, it's going to take a really long time for students to work through all these. You know, a question like that, that takes us some a decent amount of time and thought, especially if they have to write it down. You know, express what they're thinking, not just go through the thinking, but write it down. And I'm just getting a little bit concerned that we're going to have our questions are like mini research projects in and of themselves rather than being kind of a quick test to see do they have these basic prerequisites, which may not be a problem. I'm just trying to think of that our long-term goal is it to have something that's a little bit faster to administer. Do we want to eventually turn these into multiple choice questions so they can be administered fast? And are we going to run this pilot a couple times now and in the fall so that we can get good multiple choice questions, or are we going to leave them like this, or which direction are we headed in the longer run here?
Yeah. Excellent point. You don't want a pilot that's taking 2 hours to go from there. But yeah, I would think that we're going to go through an iterative process here where some questions may work very nicely the first time and others are going to have to simplify down to good multiple choice.
Yeah, I agree. I think Michelle's point is a really good one. I think the ultimate goal should be to narrow it down so that it can be done quickly.
Or was that Tisha's point?
That was Michelle's.
It was Michelle. Oh, there's Tisha. Okay, got it. Okay, well, go ahead.
But I do think of the three questions here, certainly the third one, and with the suggestion that Michael had there, that really gets at a lot. It gets at the center of sampling distribution. It gets at the spread of them. It gets at the shape of them. So if they can do this question, you really get at the heart of the idea of sampling distribution. So it may be a good one to pilot and base some shorter, give these graphs and base some shorter, eventually multiple choice questions on that one set of graphs that focus on each of those three areas, the center, the shape, and the spread. So
yeah.
Stick with it in its rich version, but with the idea that maybe not, we'll cut down what we put on the pilot test, something like that. Put the ones with more rich potential on it to try to develop some good questions out of those.
Right. Yeah, no, I would agree with that. A third question is a very nice one that allows one to get everything you want on the sampling distribution.
I like question one a lot, too.
All right, so it sounds like we're in agreement. Maybe one and three is what I'll work on. And just kind of refine it a little bit.
Yeah.
Because one gets at
decision-making
a little bit, too, recognizing extreme values and things like that.
Right.
Is one truly a question about sampling distributions, or is it about variation, sampling variation?
I think we had that. Didn't we? One conference call, we had a long...
Yep.
I'm sure you did, but...
I don't know if we ever answered the question. I think we said
I think that it's not just about variation, because the question is not which one has a larger variance. It's which person is more likely to get 20 or fewer heads. Is that...
But could you answer it just by attending to sampling variation?
Well, but sampling variation is part of a sampling distribution.
Is it adding anything beyond question three? And the reason I ask again is because you do want it to be practical, and we just gave a quiz that had three problems on sampling distributions. One was very much like question one. One was very much like question three, and we gave it in group quizzes, and it took them 40 minutes. It was three questions. You know what I'm saying? These are tough questions, and they do require a lot of thought. And you don't want to cut them off, especially when you're piloting them. So it's not that I think they're both great questions.
One option is the only concern of time is to actually think about picking half of each of our questions and pilot them to one group of students and the other half and pilot them to a second group of students so that no group of students has to invest the full amount of time.
Right.
That's true.
But we actually get a set of answers that will help us refine the questions as we need.
Yeah.
And with all due respect, I would rather look through 30 responses to my questions than 60 sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I far prefer 60. Okay.
No, I think that's a good idea. We probably don't need huge amounts of data for the pilot.
Right.
Okay. Well, Mike, are you set with doing?
I think I'm good with it, yeah.
Yeah.
We only have 15 minutes left, so we should probably move on to the others.
Okay. Well, we've covered those. Let's see. The other one we have.
The ones with variability. But it's, I sent it in email rather than putting it on Google Groups. I just sent it out to you guys. I sent it to Tisha the other day, and then I just sent it out to everybody about 45 minutes before the call. So it's
okay,
in email.
On variability. How does it begin? I have it in front of me.
At the top it says questions on variability, Michelle, April 22nd, 2008.
Well, here, let me get started. I'm not sure if that, I've got one on standby.
I think. Did anybody get it in the email?
I did.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, okay.
And I got your original one. So.
Yeah, you got your original, yes. And I just added to what I did with the ones I sent you. I just added your comments next to it.
Uh-huh.
What I did here was I built on what we had done last time and kind of kept it in the format that Michael had put it in for us. Labeling them a little bit different. The top part is there's a very good article from Joan and Danny Benzavi called Framework for Teaching and Assessing Reasoning about Variability. And they had gone through, there were those two SURGE special issues on variability. And what they had done is gone through all the papers and the research done on that, come up with what they considered kind of seven knowledge areas or content areas about variability. And then basically their article is a call for developing practical assessment items for these different areas that can be done within, you know, reasonable time, teacher, student resources. And so I looked at those seven and broke down into A, B, C, D, and E a little bit further down. Some of the ideas about variability, the measures, graphical representations, trying to compare groups, which is basically a crossover with distributional thinking. Variability in the normal distribution, and in particular the normal because it's sort of a precursor to the idea of dealing later with p-values and hypothesis testing and sampling distribution and those kind of things. And then variability in sampling, which there was crossover with sampling. So the first question, D1, is everybody with me on that one? I suggested that instead of the question was kind of a straightforward, easy one, draw a picture of two histograms that have the same shape and center but with different standard deviations. And with Tisha, I had said, we could take out the part about the same shape. Just, you can say have the same center, but one has larger standard deviation than another one. Just to kind of see today that what I was thinking in there was as a precursor to the idea of sampling distributions, that you can have the sampling distribution of the population at the same center, but with different variations. What do you think about that? Is it still too easy or not relevant?
I think it's a good question, and it might be a good starting point to say, okay, let's bring together all the graphs that people draw and then think about if we can use those to create, you know, one or a few multiple choice questions.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I'm envisioning this question where you give them, you know, three subparts to it, A, B, and C or something. Each one gives them two graphs and say, for graph one, which one has the higher center? For graph two, or which one, say all these graphs have the same center, which one has a higher spread between the two and A, which one has the higher spread between the two and B, and we can pick samples of the graphs that the students draw.
Okay.
You can have them put an axis on as well.
And I would also, in terms of the students drawing it, the first one has a larger standard deviation than the second one. If we do that, they're going to have to label which one's the first one and which one's the second one.
Right.
I wonder if we can reframe it to say something like draw a picture of two histograms that have the same center but different standard deviations, and then the second part is label, you know, label them. Label which one has the larger standard deviation or something like that. I just don't want it to be confusing of which one's the first one and which one's the second one. Because what if they draw the first one on the right side and the second one on the left side, but don't label them?
Okay. Now go down to the second one. You too?
Sure.
It's all right with me.
The original question I left with your with everybody's comments on it, and I altered it. We had some discussion about whether or not the fact that these were sample statistics with several hundred samples from the same population, whether or not that context was necessary. There, so I changed it a lot, and it actually reminds me a bit of the question we have on a preview. I can't remember which page, but when I said that they described the scores on the same final exam to three different classes of students, Class A, Class B, and Class C. I wrote the histograms on the same scale because I copied this from somewhere else and hadn't gone in and made them myself, but they should be labeled. The axis should be labeled. Identify which has the lowest variability, and if you think it's equal, explain why. And then I added a question where I was trying to get at when I said, would you report mean and standard deviation or median and the IQR to see whether they had a feeling for which measures were more appropriate relative to certain shapes? Let me think about those.
I'm sorry. So I see V2, original, V2, V3, revised, I got you. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm under V2, V3, revised.
I'm back, guys. I'm sorry. I was stepped out a bit to print off a copy of this. Where about are you?
I'm looking at page 3 with question V2, V3 revised.
Yeah, great. Okay. Well, carry on.
So we're waiting to hear your wisdom on it, Dale. That's
do you like
which
that context better than the one above?
I definitely like the context better.
Yep, and I think as long as the axes are labeled, that it's pretty clear.
Does a histogram describe? That's a minor technicality. Maybe we shouldn't even deal with it now, but the
represent
histograms below illustrate the scores,
right,
maybe.
Or summarize, I suppose.
Summarize would be a good. Oh, but it doesn't summarize. It just displays it.
Maybe just
display.
Shows.
Yeah.
Displays.
It
shows, yeah.
Okay. What do you think about the second?
And you can actually take out the second line. The three histograms are on the same scale if you put the axes in.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I'm a little confused when it says identify which class A, B, or C has the lowest variability. If you think the variability is equal in two classes, mention that. Clearly explain how you are deciding this. Well, that second sentence, if you think the variability is equal in two classes, mention that. What if they think the variability in two classes is equal but is not the smallest one there? Do they have to mention that?
Or if you change it to rank the variability.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a nice thing to do, is just to rank the three classes from lowest to greatest variability. But what if they think two are equal?
You say it with allowing for ties or something? I don't know how to word
it. Yeah, I mean, allowing to use the same number if the variability is equal. But the problem is if it's like a hair off.
Yeah. boy, we're, and then clearly explain how you're deciding this. I'm thinking back again to the issue of how much time these will take. But still, if we do use the suggestion where we break them up and give them to different people, this will work. I think we do need to have these explanations from people so that we don't presume that we know.
Yep.
And this is under variability, but there is distributional thinking here a bit as well, because you can't really get the variability without looking at, you know, where is the center and how is the shape, how are things spread out.
Can I ask a question quick? What is it about this V2, V3 revised that is very different from question V6? Is there something in V2, V3 that we're not going to get?
Now, they're all pretty similar, and I left with quite a few of them just to get a feel for.
Right.
There was...
I like the context better. Yeah. I like having a context, actually, in V2, V3. I don't know what we gain by having three and have... I mean, if I were just asking one question and I had tons of time, great, you can rank them. But will we get what we want if we just ask to compare two and tell us which has more variability?
That might be a simpler way to go.
Yeah.
Could break it apart. Compare two in pairs, two of them at a time. Well, on these distributions, I'm looking at the ones above the it seemed pretty clear that A has got the smaller variabilities compared to the other two. I don't know. Do you think there'd be any? Unless
there's
not
much value in having that in there.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe not. Well, again, if we try to get at what are we picking apart, what are the sub ideas here? Oh, it just occurs to me we're going to run out of time shortly here too. We maybe want to make sure we've got a time set up for next meeting, or our recording stopped.
Good idea.
I remember. Yeah, last time the recording just stopped after an hour.
I better take really good notes starting in a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, so for next. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say my schedule should be wide open, so.
Well, we've got a conference call on May 12th already with everybody, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
5 o'clock Eastern, I think, is what we said it was.
I don't know. I wrote 10 p.m. on my, so I've got 4 o'clock Eastern.
I thought we talked about moving it back to 4, but said that didn't work, so we left it at 5 or something. Or was that this meeting? I can't keep track of this.
I have it just at, 5 Eastern, 4 Central on the 12th.
Okay, then it's 11 for me. Okay, good. I'm glad.
And now this is the overall.
Yeah, the big one.
So, right, the big one. So we'll still want one of our own somewhere in May, huh?
You know what? Before that big one, would that be a good time to say let's polish all these questions up before that one? Because that would also sort of correspond to, you know, starting to be mid-May so that I can give it out to the students.
So we aim to do something in the next couple of weeks then.
I have it at 3 o'clock Central Time on May 12th.
I'm still trying to find mine.
It came from Bob on April 2nd is the day I got it.
Oh, there it is.
Is that the one where he says that there was a change to the time?
Is there one since then? That came?
There's one on April 8th. It sounds like 3 p.m. Central was agreed upon last time, and I think that you should stick with that time.
That was
maybe
that
I changed it
one.
And didn't change it back.
Yeah, no, that's
so
true. Change of time. There's one April 4th. Change of time for cluster meeting in May. We would like to change the time of the conference call to 4 and 5 p.m. 4 to 5 p.m. Central Time.
Right, and then April 8th, another email came out from Bob. it sounds like 3 p.m. Central was agreed upon last time, and I think that you should stick with that time.
That was
for today. I can catch up on the voice recordings.
No, that was for today's. That was for today's call.
Oh.
So the call for the RAB and research cluster is 4 to 5 p.m. Central on Monday, Wednesday. So 4 p.m. Central is 5 p.m. Eastern is 11 p.m. Monaco. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I have, too, and I didn't make any change on, so presume. Okay, but I think I'm thinking of our own call, then, if that works for us. Does the Thursday the 8th work?
Oh, you mean have us call each other before that? I'd rather wait. I'd rather do it by email before.
Oh, by email. Okay, well, that may work. So, but we should aim to have our instrument together.
Yeah.
Right, before the.
Oh, it'd be a nice target. Yeah, it'd be a good target if we could show off. Huh?
just while I'm thinking of it too. Before that May 12th conference call, I'm supposed to get something to Bob that's a little bit more concrete with our group and what we want to talk about at JSM. And so while we're doing all this, is it all right if I start to put some things together and send it out to you guys so I can gather some more information and have something that we've all agreed on before I get things to Bob for that May 12th conference call? Is that all right with everybody?
That's great.
Okay.
Yep.
So you'll just email that out. Our next meeting, what's your pleasure? Like later in May then?
Well, again, yeah. Let's try and be cognizant of when we want to get this to students.
Yeah, I know that you guys are going to be the ones all facing busy times then, and I won't be, but if I'm going to get some data from Winona State, they're done. It really is a May term. It's like a 4-week class that they'll start right away, so... mid to end of May is when we would have to be administering it to them.
20
so what about like, or what about the week of the 12th? Then sometime during the week of the 12th to kind of finalize it.
50.
Like the 15th, I cannot do. I don't think. How about the 14th? Wednesday the 14th.
That works for me.
It would work for me, too.
It works for me.
Okay.
What?
How about 2 a.m. Monaco? No, just kidding.
Does anyone remember Bob's email if he said when he wouldn't be available that week?
That's finals week. He's available.
Okay. We'll tell Andy said so.
Yeah.
So let's pick a good Monaco time.
Tonight's time was great. 10 to 11 is good. So, 4 p.m. Eastern. Good for me.
Okay.
4 Eastern.
Yeah. Does that suit everybody?
Mm-hmm.
So, 3 Central.
Okay. So, May 14th, Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Okay. That sounds fine.
What are the roles for that one? Just so I can get it right.
I'm organizer, Tisha is the moderator, Michael is the recorder, and Michelle is the synthesizer.
Okay.
Everybody moves up one from Dale's list.
Okay, great.
Just so I have this written down too, what was our target date for getting things sent to each other so I actually do it this time? did we just say like a week, 2 weeks from today? Or did we not?
We didn't say. What, if we can do it, say, within a week from today, that would be great, I suppose. And the sooner the better. But like a week from today to have an email out on the draft revision?
Okay.
That sounds good.
Okay. So now, then, where are we with the durability? Let's get too far into them.
Well, a lot of the ones here. Let me go back up. I had put in this question about V4, but I don't know how you feel. I'm real wild about it, but I wanted to put somewhere in there something about reasoning on variability with a normal distribution. And this may be just question might be a little bit too concrete or calculating, but somehow I wanted to get something in there about variability for that particular distribution because it's becomes so important when we get to sampling distribution.
Right, so this is a set of four true-false questions. So they need to be able to use the normal distribution and look up probabilities.
Well, not even look them up. I mean, my goal here was that they can kind of just reason mentally, okay, if they go one standard deviation, you got about 68% of the time, so you're beyond that. 16 on either side, two standard deviations, covers about 95% of the cases. So it's not to do any real calculations. It's just to see, are they mentally ready to talk about, you know, well, this would be unusual, this isn't unusual.
But they would have to. Go ahead. Well, that rough idea about what 68% within one standard deviation, for example, which is fine, but it is assuming that they know that.
I mean, I wonder whether we should ask it a little more directly. So we're looking at V4, right?
Yeah.
Number D, about 5% of the time demand will be less than 420 or more than 580. I find that concept of thinking about two regions a little harder on students. So maybe we change it to say about 95% of the time demand will be between 420 bottles and 580 bottles, which is a more direct application of the 95%
okay,
rule.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and maybe make number C, maybe make that the third one, and the one that's currently C, make that the fourth one.
Okay.
So that it's in somewhat increasing order of difficulty.
Difficulty. What do you think? I mean, do you think that we need a question here somewhere on can they reason on the normal distribution? It's come sort of in and out of our discussions as it's part of the prerequisite for sampling distribution.
Yeah, I think they do need to know about the normal distribution. You know, how much detail they need, I suppose, is another question.
I'm trying to think back. One of the questions that Michael had on the sampling distribution, where he had to say for a sample of size 9, which of the curves would be the most likely representation of the sampling distribution. And I'm thinking, well, to do that, they really need to know, okay, so the square root of 9 is 3, so they need to take the standard deviation divided by 3, and then need to look at, okay, let me go two standard deviations away from the mean. Do I have most of the possibilities here? For me, you have to kind of reason that way to answer that question.
Yep. Yeah. So they would need some of the same knowledge. Although there they need more knowledge about what the sampling distribution, how it's related to population. This is a pre
step. Right, this is a pre-step, right. This is why I was trying to throw in something on this, but I'm just not so sure I'm wild about the way I've done this.
I don't know that I would put the normal distribution in the category of variability.
Yeah.
It seems more like distributional thinking.
Distributional thinking?
Yeah. Very specific distributional thinking. Well, I think the point is we should have it somewhere in our prerequisites.
Okay.
Well, the question then is that the V4s, are we happy enough with that, with the change that Michael's suggesting?
Right. Yeah, I think that makes more sense. I think he's right.
Yeah.
And what do you think about A? Should I just get rid of A? The only reason I put A in there is that so often I find people think of the normal distribution, they think, oh, everything is right at the mean.
Hmm.
But I'm not sure that that's so clear the way I've written it.
Well, that's why we do a pilot, to see how distracting it is. And does anybody choose that? We, you know, instead of saying whether they're valid or invalid, too, we could just set these as true/false, and people would be more, you know, familiar with that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That would make it easier how to respond. Just a TF
yeah.
out. From.
Okay.
I actually like that first question, because I think it's just a huge misconception. You know, and maybe we won't catch anyone with it, but maybe we'll catch someone, and that'll be a great indicator that they just don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so clear that, again, I like giving people kind of a warm-up to the problem.
Okay.
Okay.
And true/false really doesn't take very long to grade.
That's right.
That's yeah. advantage.
Unless
I'll
we ask them why.
To grade that section, huh?
We could explain your reasoning. Well, let's just do a check here of where we stand with our time right now. So we've got a video. Do we want to spend some more time on it, or what's your schedule?
I can stay on for a bit more if you all have time. Or even, you know, 10.
It works for me, yeah. It works for others.
I can go till about 5:30, but at 5:30 I'm going to have to go
okay.
head out.
Well, let's aim for about another 10, 15 minutes then and see where we are. We can do some things with email then too. But our goal here would be to pull out at least, you know, two, three, four questions from on this topic, right? Now, do you have a suggestion, Michelle, about which, if you know, what would be your favorite candidates that we ought to focus on?
For these questions, for the
variability question, yeah.
I like V2 or V3, altering it a bit, maybe getting rid of one of them, because I like the idea of trying to figure out which one has more or less variability, even though I think Tish's point, V6, I think this one came from something that Bob had done.
Mm-hmm.
V6 looks like he wrote a paper, Melinda Liu or something like that as well, about really understanding the standard deviation and lots of different things that they tried and how some common misconceptions, and he's put them all into this question. So this question tends to more guide, you know, fish out different common misconceptions that they must have already found in their research, whereas V2, V3 is leaving it more open for us to discover the kinds of things that we find with our students.
Now, as we pick the questions, maybe it's good to refer to your analysis up front of the five different pieces underlying it to make sure that we hit on the all those, or at least the most important ones.
Well, B gets covered pretty well. Measures of variability in graphical representation. Although there's not a box plot here, per se, there was box plots in some of the some of the questions further down that I started to label D1, D2 were more distributional. So maybe we should throw in a box plot somewhere to talk about comparing variability. Comparing groups comes in here, and it also comes in some of the ones that Tisha had. So. You know,
okay, well, our challenge, yeah, I think we have to sort out who we want to go with.
I don't particularly like V5.
V5?
Yeah. I'm not that crazy about it. The idea, I think, that what Bob was trying to get is that some people, when he wrote this little program with the bars, is that they look more at the shape of the bars and the order of the bars than the spread of them. But I'm not that crazy about V5, so
they have exactly height going across are the same. You know, so the only thing that's there is this how they're spread out. Somehow, I think it would be pretty easy.
Yeah, I don't think it's terribly insightful, that one. I'll get rid of that one.
If you have them compare two histograms like this, we have them do this all the time, and one of the things they'll instantly look at pretty much all the time is just range. And so they'll answer this question just based on the range. So if you do this, it might be nice to have the two graphs have the same range. So if they have to look at something other than range,
yeah.
But this feels like a little bit of a repeat of the first question that we talked about with Tisha.
Yeah, and so I'm not, like I say, I think that was a good point that Tisha made earlier, too, is that these pretty much tap the same thing. So it's really...
Yeah. Okay. I just deleted it.
Okay. Well, let's see. Michelle, would you want to point us toward one that you think we should look at?
Well, I think we're pretty much, we have left them out, because the ones underneath are all, they were, what I just did there was take what we had done before, and
uh-huh.
I started relabeling them as, you know, distributional question one, distributional question two, so I was just moving beyond the ones on variability to others.
Yeah. We've already talked about two or three for you to revise, Michelle, right? Variability today?
Mm-hmm.
We talked about V1, right?
Yeah, we talked about V1, V2, and V3 before,
and
I guess the only one I talked about is V6.
Which has more variability. Now, that one seems to have the same issue with one would grab the range, and there you go. Huh.
So you've got a place to start with some revisions, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's see. The other topic we had was we spent a lot of time last time talking about the questions on sampling, and I took suggestions and made a revision and sent that out. I suppose the thing, we could take a quick look at those if you're up for it. So the first one is the four students that want to do a survey, want to find out how much time students at their school spend on homework during an average week, and they conducted a survey using the same survey questions. And then we have the four people. And following Bob's suggestion, we separated out which of the students used a random procedure, and what this is getting at is a lot of people think haphazard is random, so we'd be able to sort out which really random. And then the next one is whose sample is most likely to be representative of the students at the school. That one could also be check all that apply, I suppose, but if we say most likely, that's kind of forcing them to pick the best one.
Yeah, I like this revision. You changed all the sample sizes to be the same sample size, I think, from what you had originally. Yeah,
Strip off extraneous variables. Well, okay. If you have other ideas on it, just send me an email. Yes.
Second one, I like the idea of checking all that apply. What if we just say, you know, which sample or samples are representative of students at the school? Check all that apply.
Okay. So that's the question. Should we do that or force them to pick the best one?
I mean, but in reading through them, it's fairly clear that only one of them should satisfy it. Right.
Yeah, it should. Yeah. Well, for a shorter question, it would be shorter if we just pick one. If we ask them to check all that apply, we'd probably want to have some explanation about why they would pick different ones. If we do have a why on that.
Uh-huh, I see.
Well, let's maybe think about that a little more, just to get us through before we run out of time here.
Mm-hmm.
What we have here is that people drawing data and they get bored doing it, and two people just make up their data. And the question is,
I had the question at the end saying, which of these three students do you think actually did the experiment? And I'm thinking I should maybe change that to which two of these three students do you think just made up their data, explain your reasoning? And that would focus it more on what's odd about the distributions. I think maybe better than saying which one did it, saying which two just made up their data and explain your reasoning. And then presumably they'll look at Alex and see, well, Alex ended up with six red on every one. That's very unlikely. They'll look at Beverly and see that Beverly gets only two red out of 10 on one of these tries, gets a different result each time, whereas Chang ends up getting things closer to the middle and gets the same in a couple of times.
Can you phrase it so they have to say for the student, for Alex, yes, he made it up, or no, he didn't. For Beverly, yes, she did, no, she didn't.
Yeah, and
I
why?
Think we're leading them a little too much if we say which two of these three. Or
well, oh, and what you mean? We could just say for each one, do you think they might have made up the data?
At the top, we tell them that only one of them actually did it.
Okay.
And so we already told them.
Oh, there
them
it is. I need to read it better.
That only one of them did it, but I like Dale's suggestion, rather than saying which ones do you think did the experiment, say which ones do you think made up the data. Why do you think that? So the focus is on the incorrect ones rather than the,
yeah. So
anyhow,
if my quick calculation is correct, if you have six draws, the probability of getting at least one that has two or fewer is about 7%.
Uh-huh.
So okay, I wonder if we want to make it one red instead of two.
We could make it even rarer.
Yeah. That would put it at about 1% probability.
Okay.
Yeah. Originally, we had a 0 in there and a 0 and a 10, but that... And they were all even, like we had 0, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10.
Right.
But this is obvious. But this maybe isn't obvious enough. Although getting a 2 and a 3 and a 9 and an 8 is pretty unlikely.
Yeah, I only looked at a single, you know, what's the probability that 1 out of 6 is 2 or less?
Right.
The only thing I quickly calculated.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, what if you make the other 4 or 2 also? Just make it a little more extreme. 2, 2, 3, 6, 8, 9.
Yeah, or putting in a 1.
Or putting in 1 instead of 2. Yeah, that would do it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's try it. Can you calculate the odds of that pretty quickly?
About 1% instead of 7%. I mean, but again, that's only a calculation that a single event out of 6 draws is that unlikely. It's not really the p-value that we would want.
Yeah. Right. You'd have to look at the whole set of things. But okay, we will. But that would probably make it pretty good reason. Okay, number 3. I changed that earlier. I had like 51% were boys and 49% girls, and the answer there is actually getting all 6 boys is the most likely single sequence because on each baby the most likely outcome would be a boy. But here we have them split now 50-50, so all of these are equally likely.
And the only thing, I think I wrote this in an email to you, the only thing that I find odd about this one, putting it right after the previous one, is that in the previous one, we're not all that interested in the order. We're just more interested in what the result was. And in this one, we're really interested in the order. Because they're all, but it's not that getting 3 boys and 3 girls is equally as likely as getting 6 boys out of 6 kids, is that the order that they're born in is equally likely.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yep. So your thought would be either to put that separated from other question or make it more explicit that we're focusing on the order?
You do say the sex of the first 6 babies born last year was recorded in order of birth, so you do make it pretty explicit. I just think when we would administer this, definitely put it somewhere else rather than right after the previous one. Where the previous one, what matters is the count of how many reds and yellows there are. And this one, if you were to reason in the same way, you would say that one is the least likely because it's less likely to have six boys than to have three girls and three boys out of six kids.
Yeah, I think making really explicit, clear, emphasizing that we're recording them in order, that's a key part of this. And if they skip over that, then they'll interpret it differently.
Right. I would also add that not all students are going to know what it means by multiple births. So I might say there were no multiple births, parentheses, twins, triplets, et cetera.
Yeah, okay. That would be fine.
I mean, someone's going to say, how can there not be multiple births? You have six kids here.
Yeah, that's right. More than one.
Why do we have to put that?
Because if the first two kids were born, then they're no longer... What?
Yeah, they're not... Well, if
they're identical twins.
But that's a pretty rare outcome, but yeah, that'd be true.
1 in 270 in the U.S.
Boy, you are...
Coming from the father of twins.
Coming from the father of twins. I did all this research when we found out we were expecting twins, so...
Now, yes, of course. That's good. I just thought you had an encyclopedia in your head here.
Well, I love it when I tell people I'm a statistician and they start quoting statistics to me, thinking that as a statistician I must know all statistics.
Okay, so what is the area of Lake Superior? Okay, so that's good. So the idea of making sure we don't have these next to each other, putting in twins, triplets, et cetera, or possibly if we just omit that, it wouldn't really mess it up much. It would simplify the question to leave out that sentence, there were no multiple births. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, what if you actually be more explicit and say, let's assume that the births are independent events? Because then that rules out the possibility of identical twins or triplets. And it also rules out the possibility of, who knows if two sisters were trying to get pregnant at the same time. I mean, again, incredibly unlikely event, but just to be really explicit about one of the assumptions we make in the probability calculation.
Okay, we could do that. Okay, well, maybe I'll fiddle with that and get something out to you on that. Now, what about the last one? The last time I had a strange number names are, I think, 29 or something, and Bob suggests that made it kind of difficult for you to use any simple system, so I changed it to 25 names, so you could use, say, a random number table more easily, or something else.
And that was one of the questions that I wrote when I responded to these ones, was that if we give to most students, I think, would think of either putting names in a hat or making up a frame and using a random number generator. And when we distribute this test, are we going to have those kinds of things available? So is it better to say circle their name, that they actually do it, or explain how they would do it?
You're right. Maybe explaining how they would do it would be better. Again, in the interest of time, too, if you're actually going to have people do it, it's going to take more time.
Yeah, although I find that when you say explain how you would do it, you get students who say, well, I would use a random number table.
Yeah.
And that's their complete answer. And I find that insufficient.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, they're going to say, here's the three that I picked. I used a random number generator.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to explain how they did it either.
Right, because they won't actually have it.
I mean, if this is something we're going to ask them to do or think about, I wonder if it's worthwhile to do a sample of 3 out of 10 instead of 6 out of 25. In particular, because if they use a random number table, it's easier to use, a sample size of 10 instead of 25.
One could also just ask and pick one at random. There's a really neat trick for that is you use your watch, if you have one handy, or a clock. Is you just assign, 60 seconds is divisible by all kinds of numbers, and you just say, okay, I assign a number to them, and then you look at the second hand or the indicator. But I guess if they have that, they could do. If we actually ask them to do all six, that's going to take some time, and they may not have the means to do that.
Yeah, that's what I was just concerned about. Do they actually have the time and the means to execute this?
Maybe just drop the question.
Well, but I like the idea of maybe selecting one out of eight one out of 10.
Yeah. In some sense, the question one, that's a random business, you know, random as opposed to haphazard.
Yeah, it's true. They do kind of cross over on topics.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe we just include number one.
Yeah, if we've got questions one, two, and three, that may be enough. Okay. Okay, what else for the good of the order here?
So I need to actually call it quits and head over to my next meeting.
Okay, well, I think we are just about there, huh?
So we're going to get try to get revisions to each other within a week, right?
Yep.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
Great. Thank you, everybody.
Yes,
good
I think this
to
is
you
been,
all.
Yep. Have a good week.
Thanks, everyone.
We'll take care,
Andy, I think I'll see you on Tuesday.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.